The world's on fire. Welcome to the show. Who even cares anymore? My God.
We just had a really disastrous election.
It was so sad.
You know what? You know what? When you look at the stats, like, people under 40 did not vote Tory. They overwhelmingly were voting for Labour. So I just feel like it's like climate change and these other issues where it's like all these older people. Yes, I will say boomers because I think it's fine that we are dragging them. It's all these older people making these like decisions the rest of us are going to have to live out. And it made me like, this being the week that Greta Thunberg was like Time Person of the Year, I've thought she's cool for a while, but I was like, yeah, man, she's so on it. It's like, you know, just our election. Like all the younger people are like Labour and it's like all over the country.
Yeah, and then our dickhead president tweeted at a 12-year-old girl.
Yeah.
Just talking shit.
But you saw her response, right? She changed her like Twitter profile to like teenager with anger management issues.
No, I didn't see that. That's so good.
And then she says something like, currently chilling with a friend watching a movie or something.
Oh, that's great. I don't have Twitter, so I don't see all that stuff. I just saw that he fucking, ugh. So I'm so excited that he's getting impeached. Yeah. This is the gender knot? Is that what you were going to say?
Yeah. This is the gender knot. I'm Nats.
I'm Dan. So glad you're here celebrating the end of the world with us.
This is our last episode of the season.
Might be the last episode ever. The world's... We're doomed.
We don't survive till March.
Oh my God. No, we'll be back in March, I think. And hopefully America will have a new president by then, even though the election isn't for a whole year.
Wait, let me tell you something funny. Recently I saw someone use the term Pelosi'd in terms of when it takes you forever to do something really obvious.
Oh, that's funny.
Which I thought it was like so-and-so Pelosi'd on that, which I think is... I think everyone should start using that.
Yeah. Not to go down a political rabbit hole, but like this whole like you made a phone call to the Ukrainian president is the reason we're going to impeach you. It's like, come on, guys. We've had 3.5 years of every day doing an impeachable offense. Anyway.
Pelosi Pelosi'd. You see, that's what happened.
She really did. She really did.
And I really like her. I really like her, but I'm like... Pff.
The politics of it all. Anyway, what are we doing today?
So you chatted to Liz Plank a few weeks ago. We've got the other half of that, which is a really interesting conversation. And I have a lot of thoughts.
Naz so, has thoughts.
So Dan and I are going to be back after the conversation because I have many thoughts. While I edited it, I was like, I have a lot of thoughts.
Meantime, you want to do some housekeeping?
Yeah, let's do some housekeeping. So we're going to be back early March. Write to us. Send the show to people. As always, send it to 3 people right now. And
four.
Also leave us 4.
It's now 4. You had your chance at 3. You blew it.
We're going to up it. Also, leave us reviews. They really help. And write to us, thegendernot@gmail.com. Speaking of which... we got an email actually a few weeks ago that I keep forgetting to read that I have been ribbing Dan about.
I've quoted it multiple times and we haven't read it.
So here it is. It's Doreen from London. She says, "Hi guys, love the show. I'm an instant addict and have been binging the whole day since I stumbled upon you. But I have to say, the thing I look forward to most is Dan's response to any question, which always starts with, well, yes and no." Dan, you're looking a bit defensive there. Okay, so Doreen says, "I look forward to the day when Dan comes off the fence and will favour one answer over the other, and I will be able to see Naz's boldness celebrated. Jokes aside, I've grown to enjoy the anticipation before Dan is asked a question. It's just hilarious. Much love." Thank you, Doreen. She also said that she loved the Emotional Labour series.
It's a series now.
It's a series. Doreen, I've been ribbing Dan about this every time we talk and he gives me some wishy-washy answer. I'm just like,
I don't see the problem with celebrating the grayness in life.
No,
you
know, that's true.
From the Pacific Northwest. That's our weather. That's your weather.
It is. That's true. No, no, that is true. I think nuance is important and being black and white isn't. But she is right, though. Sometimes when I'm like, when I'm like decisive and you're all like, well, yes and no. And I'm like, oh, God, here we go.
Well, that's because here's the thing. Sometimes you make a very strong point and yet there is another way of looking at something. I just enjoy, anyway. Okay. Here's another letter. we've received mail from Iwona before. This is Iwona, big fan.
In Poland. We got a,
yeah, Iwona in Poland. Thank you for writing to us again. We get a lot of stuff, but this is, you know, you, the rest of you are gonna have to step your game up because Iwona is like double dipping here, and I mean, I'm down for a third. I think this one's about the Esther Perel episode. It says, "Dear Naz and Dan, thank you for another wonderful episode." You're so welcome, Iwona. Okay, one, I loved what Esther said about how women should help men because, though I think I understand Naz's uncompromising approach, that is what I would like to happen if the situation was reversed. A trivial example, but one of the areas of life that I lack almost any competence is our cars. I can drive one, but even buying gas is outside my area of expertise. This is my husband's job. But if he wanted me to become more involved, and if I wanted to become more involved, I'd like him to teach me about cars. Obviously, he could just show me the car and leave me to figure it out by myself, mumbling how he's done doing all the car labor in our marriage. But respectful, good-willed cooperation seems like the fastest way. And it could also bring us closer. I am not saying he should do it for all the women in his life. No way. So I am not saying women should help all the men learn about emotions. But maybe just the real special ones? Two, if we assume women could help men in emotional development for the sake of both parties, it would have to be, it would be wise to help. So the responsibility for the outcome should be on the trainee, not the teacher. Okay, hold on. I'm not done yet. And how to draw this line is a million-dollar question, at least in my life, since I am both a university teacher and a mother. Where exactly does facilitating become babysitting? But by doing so, we could prevent women from taking over the emotional sphere yet again. And we could hold men accountable for their own development.
Yeah.
All right. And here comes part three. Climate change is yet another patriarchy-related problem. By doing what you do so well, you fight climate change as well. Best, Iwona. P.S. Of course, I could figure out the car by myself. But what for? I'm trying to reduce carbon footprint anyway. I'm trying to reduce my carbon footprint anyway.
That was
hell
great.
Yeah.
Thanks, Iwona.
Yeah, thank you. I also think that climate change is patriarchy related, and here's how. So I read this statistic a while ago. I'm going to go off on a crazy conspiracy theory really quick that America, the United States of America, is going that whiteness is going to be a minority in the United States of America by the year 2042. And then and I heard that a few years ago. And then last year I heard that if we keep going the direction we're going with carbon emissions and so forth, that climate change will be irreparable and we will no longer be able to live on this planet in the year 2040. Those two statistics seem unrelated until you realize that old white men decided that if they can't be the top dog, they're going to just sink the fucking ship. That's my theory. I think old white politicians were like, fuck it, if we're not in charge, no one is.
Wait, you mean they made up the statistic about 2040?
No, they're destroying the world on purpose.
Oh yeah, yeah,
because yeah, they're not gonna be in charge anymore. So no, they're like, climate change isn't real, fuck it, burn everything.
Dude, this is how I feel about a lot of the politics around the world over the past half decade. It's like minorities are stepping up, women are stepping up, we're having these conversations, and sort of like a certain type of white male, I don't want to say all, but a certain type of white male is like,
you know what?
Fuck it.
For the sake of me not saying
yes, but no. What,
yes, but no. Let's just go ahead and say all white men.
I don't know, man. Okay, you're the one in our duo who can say.
I'm on record as saying 100% of white men are the problem.
Okay, let's move on because now I won't. I liked your points.
That's what Doreen wanted.
That's what Doreen wanted. I liked your points. It actually reminds me once ages ago with Dan, I was discussing stuff about like. So I don't really want to go into it. A friend of mine who wasn't stepping up and I felt pissed. And Dan, you specifically said to me, the guys who don't want to step up properly, fuck them. They can sink. And that stayed with me. So I don't know why. I just thought of that when you were reading that. Okay, let's go on to this week's episode. So Dan, you had a massive chat with Liz Plank a few weeks ago. She's written a book, For the Love of Men, which is a new vision for mindful masculinity. So you guys had a massive chat. And yeah. Here's the second half of it. I had lots of thoughts. So we're going to be back.
Thoughts coming up.
We're going to be back. Here's Liz Plank.
I think it's really interesting to talk to men about what they talk about with their dads. And not to generalize, obviously, there's so many different conversations going on. But a thing that I hear a lot.
Probably cabins.
Cabins.
I bet it's cabins.
Dogs. But even, I mean, that's a really specific example. But generally, it's like you guys talk about things, not feelings. And the way to show.
Well, that's because feelings aren't real. Continue.
Yes, yes, men don't have feelings.
Well, we have them. They just don't exist.
Yes,
go on.
Right. And so men tend to have conversations with their, a lot of men that I interviewed told me that their fathers will ask them how they are through questions about their finances, questions about their job, question about like, are your benefits good? Are you making, paying for the bills?
How's work is a good
exactly.
question.
Exactly. And so obviously this is not because fathers don't care about their sons. It's that they do care, but that's the acceptable sort of script. And that's the way to show that they do care. They're checking in on you. But that also means that it's then hard to have a conversation about real things.
Well, my dad cracks every once in a while.
Okay.
He is at the same time both the sweetest, kindest, like gentlest man I've ever met and the most stubborn, bullheaded, hot-tempered maniac I've ever met. Like, both. I don't know how he does it, but every once in a while he cracks and we have like an emotional moment.
And what do you think, Lee? Why does that happen?
Well, one time my brother got arrested and I'm sober and my brother was dealing with some bullshit with the law and drinking and whatever. And I was trying to help him out and like not like let our folks know about it.
Okay.
And my dad, like one, I was leaving because I don't know where I was living at the time, but it wasn't Seattle. And I was leaving his house and I was like heading to the airport and he was like, hey, by the way, I know what you did for your brother. And it was really sweet. Like it was, and he like cried a little. It was really cute. Yeah.
And then how did you feel?
I was like, no big deal. No, it was great. We've had those moments here and there through my entire life.
Okay.
Off and on, once in a blue moon.
And does he always have to initiate?
No,
okay. Sometimes
I do it too.
Okay.
I write him a nice card on his birthday.
Okay.
I try to make him cry. You know what I mean?
Okay. And do you feel like you were...
But then when we're done, one of us always goes, all right, enough of all this lovemaking. And then we move on with our lives. That's a true story.
I think that's fine. You know, my goal with this book is not to tell men how to be men.
That was my first hard question for you. What gives you
the
right?
No, nothing gives me the right. And I'm not interested in doing that. And that's not my intention. I'm not telling men how to be or who to be. What I'm trying to do is offer a productive framing on this conversation where I actually believe that masculinity is the solution, not the problem. I don't think there's anything wrong with men. I think that there's something wrong with the way that we raise them and the system in which we've all agreed is normal, natural. And if you listen to Fox News and Jordan Peterson or Joe Rogan's podcast, which I'm sure your audiences really intersect.
Yeah. We got a lot of Rogan heads.
Yes.
Shout out to all my Rogan heads.
All my Rogans. And so if you listen to them and what they're saying this is men are biologically this way. And I think that that's super anti-man. to be completely honest. I think saying men are just idiots. Men are just, and people have told me, men have told me this on this book tour. You know, men are just dumber. And I'm like, you know what? The brain is a unisex organ. We all have the same brain. we all have the same heart. I think that everyone is special and everyone is unique and everyone should have the right to be whoever the fuck they want to be. And so men who are...
I agree and disagree completely.
Okay, go. Hit me.
I think everyone is special and everyone is unique, but at the same time, no one is special and no one is unique. Yes. And all experiences are at some point or another the same. And therefore, none of us need to pretend that we're any different or better or worse than anyone.
Yeah.
Continue.
I mean, yes, 100%. I just don't
And we're all going to die and none of this matters, so why not just be nice?
Exactly. Yes. And so often we talk about being nice to others, right? Like even, so my sister is a teacher in elementary school and she was like, we always teach kids, be nice to others, right? Have compassion for other people, do nice things for other people. But actually, if you teach kids and human beings to have compassion for themselves and be kind towards themselves, all they're going to want to do is be compassionate towards other people. You know, we often sort of bring that up in relationships, right? You got to love yourself first. But it's not this like selfish, lavish, like self-care shit. It's compassion. And in the data, what I found super interesting was that self-compassion for men was an antidote to shame. It was the antidote to a lot of the suppression and the, you know, it has a term, alexithymia. It's such a bad word. It's a hard word to say. So men in our society are estranged from their emotions, right? Not all men, but there's a real phenomenon that psychologists have documented now called alexithymia. And the number one way for men to be able to overcome that, which researchers have found, is self-compassion and having kindness for oneself. I think that we're so focused on, when we do have this conversation around men, we're like, stop hurting other people, stop hurting women, stop hurting, right? And those things are correct, right? We have to have conversations around domestic violence, around violence against women. The thing that I wish we were also talking about in this conversation is violence against men and men's violence against themselves. And again, if you look at all of the data that's out there, we have a very confused view of violence in our society, of gun violence, for example. There's a study that just came out this week that I was reading. Most Americans think that the vast majority of gun violence is mass shootings. And as we know, there's a mass shooting every single day in this country. Mm. There's an immense amount of violence coming from mass shootings, and we see them on the news. The vast majority of gun deaths are actually death by suicide, and the vast majority of those deaths are men. And so you get a very different understanding of the problem of gun violence in this country when you acknowledge the way that this is affecting men disparately, and that it's not actually men going out and killing other people, it's men killing themselves.
But doesn't that help women?
No, no. We love men.
I mean, if a guy offs himself, that's one less fucking obstacle.
No, I don't want them. No, you know, women don't want to lose the men in their lives to suicide. They also don't want to lose the men in their lives to this patriarchal society that suppresses them. Like I as a woman who dates women and men, but I've dated a lot of men. Writing this book really helped me see that there was just so much mispotential, that there was so much potential in so many men that they weren't necessarily able to meet because they hadn't been taught how to do it.
So how do we teach them how to do it?
What do you think? You're a man. What do you, because you're evolved in terms of your emotional intelligence.
Some think so.
And why do you think that is?
It was an accident, mostly. Okay. I didn't do it on purpose. I got sober 6+ years ago.
Congrats.
And thank you. And a big part of that is a lot of looking at one's actions and and like your past and your motivations and your what we call defects of character, which are usually just like necessities of life, like human nature, but like taken to an extreme. And it's identifying that stuff, and it's like talking about it with another person one on one. And usually that person is like, yeah, duh, me too.
Yeah.
And that tends to create that sense of like self-compassion that you're talking about. And then you eventually, you know, go out and you like try to right a lot of those wrongs. And that sure helps build self-esteem.
Yeah.
And a sense of like usefulness. And then you help other people get sober. And then you watch them go through that process. And you get to be the person going, yeah, duh, me too.
Yeah.
And you realize that this knucklehead who doesn't know how to get his shit straight is exactly like you in every way. And then it's like, oh my God, I for no reason, I love this guy just because he has the same problem as me and he's trying to get sober. And if I can love him no matter what, then I have to love me no matter what. And it's like this whole thing, right?
Yes.
And then I don't know, somehow that bled into doing shit like this.
That's so interesting because I interviewed for the book Sammy Rangel. So Sammy Rangel is to this date the most violent offender basically in Wisconsin, in the state of Wisconsin. He was incarcerated.
Big state.
It's big state. And he basically joined a gang by the time he was 11. So he had a horrible childhood where he was abused. And I detail that in the book. And he basically was in a triple max prison. There were three layers of steel walls, basically between him and any other human being. So he was completely isolated in the basement of this triple max prison. And
that sounds like how you would help somebody.
Exactly.
That sounds like the help he needs.
And so, I mean, that's a whole conversation, right? The way that we are, we're punishing men instead of healing men in our society, right? And the level of incarceration, which is increasing, and we have a president that is the law and order president, right? That sees punishment as a route to remedying, I guess, some of the problems of our society when it's actually making them worse. We're taking men that are already broken. We're breaking them even more than we're throwing them out into the world afterwards. And then they're even worse than when they entered.
And going, but, all right.
Yes.
You should have known better the whole time, and now you definitely must.
Exactly. And anyway, and there's all the racial components of that, and they're far less likely to be able to find a job afterwards, and actually then they're still failing, right? At that idea of idealized masculinity and just surviving. So Sammy Rangel told me that Sammy Rangel is still the most violent offender, is also the founder of an anti-hate organization that has helped hundreds and hundreds of ex-neo-Nazis, white supremacists, and ex-gang leaders basically heal themselves and use their power for good and help other people get out of that. And the reason why he was able to go from being an extremely violent person in incarcerated is one guy named George. He was a prison worker, a prison caseworker, and he knocked on every door before he entered. He knocked on the first steel door and said, can I come in? Knocked on the second steel door, can I come in? And knocked on the third steel door and said, can I come in? And the thing that Sammy told me is exactly what you just told me. He said, George was the first person that loved me unconditionally. George, it didn't matter how many people I'd beat up. I mean, he didn't approve. Right? He was a caseworker. He was literally working at the prison and trying to make sure that he wasn't doing these things. And that's why he was there. He was holding him accountable and helping him change, but he loved him no matter what he did. And Sammy had never experienced that. And the way that Sammy talked about joining a gang when he was 11 was the way that someone would talk about falling in love. It was, you know, for the first time I felt safe. For the first time I felt seen and heard.
That was me with booze.
Yeah.
I get it.
Right? And so we talk about gangs. We talk about alcohol. We talk about drugs. We talk about the drink, but we don't talk about the thirst, right? We talk about how they're meeting those needs, but we don't talk about why, you know, what needs are not being met.
Right.
And how a lot of men and, you know, this people, obviously women and gender non-binary people deal with all of these problems too. But these are problems that men deal with disproportionately. And these are emotional, right?
Right.
Issues. Like, I'm sure getting sober was an emotional journey more than anything else.
Easiest thing I ever did.
I mean, I'm sure.
True story. So easy.
What?
All you have to do is stop being a fucking moron.
Hmm.
It's like really easy.
What? And what was, and that was easy?
Yeah.
To stop doing.
Well, like luckily, luckily I had this dad growing up who was very, he was a hardliner. You know what I mean? And there was a lot of times in my life where it was just like, put your head down, fucking do the work. It sucks, but you just do it until you're done.
Right.
And the only way to get through it is to fucking get through it. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so when I got sober and it was just like, there's all this stuff that you have to do. And it was just like, all right, I'm just going to put my head down and I'm going to do the stuff and I'm not going to complain. And if it sucks, it sucks. But these people all say it works, and so I'll just do it. And I just did it. And I think the only obstacle that anyone ever runs into when like making serious like internal changes is like that unwillingness to actually do the work, right? But when we just put our heads down and do the stupid work,
right?
It's fucking. It's like anytime I think about like anytime there's something in life I don't want to do. The build up to that thing I don't want to do is always so much worse than the thing itself, right? Like, oh my God, I got to call this person and fucking explain this thing and it's going to suck.
Yeah.
And I got to call them before Tuesday. And of course I wait until Tuesday and then I call them and it takes like 8 seconds and they're totally chill and it was no big deal.
Yeah. And I, you know, one thing that I get all the time, which is like, how do I talk to the men in my life about this, you know, this conversation about change, basically, which is, you know, coming to someone and saying you need to change something about the way that you're doing things, is a difficult.
Well, to me, like I wanted to bring that up when you were talking about it earlier, like saying to men, like, you need to stop this and you need to change that and blah, blah, blah. Like, to me, that feels like that's increasing the other problem of like self-compassion or self-love, right? Like, because I can't love myself if everything I do is wrong. Do you know what I mean? If everybody outside me is telling me that everything I'm doing is wrong, then I can't love me. And if I can't love me, then I'm gonna burn this bitch down.
Yes. And what you just said is so important, because I actually think we're not saying men are doing bad things. I think we're saying men are bad.
Right.
And there's a difference between, Brené Brown talks about this, about shame and regret. She says that regret is actually a really productive emotion, right? So if you got drunk last night and, sorry, I shouldn't use that. She uses that. She uses that example, but it's,
it's fine.
Well, I'll use myself. So if I get drunk and I am at my office party, which I've done, oh my gosh. I mean, I've had struggles with, I have an addictive personality. And so I was, I drank a lot in my 20s and I just basically can't, my body rejects alcohol now. So thankfully I don't partake in that as much, but I sometimes would go to, work happy hours. And then you get too drunk and you wake up the next morning. You're like, oh my God, what did I do? What did I say? And let's say that you said something inappropriate. If you have regret, you say, oh my God, I did that thing. Like, I did something really bad. And then regret will make you perhaps want to call up the person that you talk to, say, oh my God, did I say something? I'm really sorry I said that. Or did I, partake in any kind of attitude or behavior that was hurtful to someone else? If you have regret and say, I did something bad, it actually will make you more likely to make amends. So regret is, I did something bad. Shame is, I am bad. So shame is, and I've been in that place so many times, of waking up the next day and being like, I can't believe that I did that. I am so bad. I'm bad. I'm a mess. I'm broken. If you feel shame, all of the behaviors that you're going to take part in are not going to be the healthy ones. You're not going to want to go make amends, because if you feel shame, you're going to hide.
Right.
Right.
They don't want my amends.
They don't want me. I'm a burden to them. Right. Yeah. And that's what
they
leads
just,
you.
I should just never talk
just
to that
never
person
talk to them
again,
ever again
and probably move to Minnesota.
Exactly. And so that's the difference. And I think that in this conversation around masculinity, we're stuck in men are bad. and cancel men, and men are trash, and it's not men that are trash, it's the system in which we raise men that's trash. And there are a lot of bad behaviors that men are engaging in, and we need to talk about those behaviors. And we need to acknowledge that, unfortunately, most men have partaken in these bad behaviors. And in the same way that white people have partaken in racist things throughout their lives because they grew up in a racist society, we need to create space where we're not shaming people, we're shaming behaviors. And we are, if we don't do that, we're sending them in the arms of Jordan Peterson. We're sending them in the arms of Tucker Carlson, who's saying, I see you and I hear you and I love you. And what you, who you are, there's nothing wrong with who you are. And all those people who are telling you, who are shaming you and making you feel like shit, they're wrong.
Shame and regret. That's good. So, okay. So back to my other question. Yes. How do we do this? How do we help men help themselves?
Yeah. I want men to be leading this conversation because men know best, and men know what they, I think men have the answers to these questions. They just haven't been asked those questions. And from a, you know, female perspective, when I, when I'm talking in terms of feminist spaces and progressive spaces, which is where I think we need a lot of change and where we could make a lot of space for these conversations, we need a productive conversation around masculinity that doesn't start from a place of shame, that doesn't start from a place of you're bad, but that starts from a place of you are fundamentally good. And you are doing your best with what you've been given.
So but what we need is Jesus.
What we need is Jesus. we need a progressive movement that that creates a productive path for men to excel and to evolve and to be a and to be fully participants in the movement, and where we make it very clear that they also benefit from this movement. Very often we tell men, it's almost like a sort of like a moral high ground, right? To be to say men need to be allies in the feminist progressive fight by virtue of just being completely selfless and being purely interested in women's well-being and wanting their mothers, their wives, and just women in general to be free. Of course, right? White people should be part of racial justice movements because they should be standing up for the freedom of everyone, not just because they would benefit from a society that's less racist. I think that that can be true. I also think that we should not be hiding the benefits to men of feminism or of getting rid of the patriarchy or questioning the patriarchy in an effort to just be like goody two shoes. And I get criticized a lot when I bring up the fact that men benefit from abortion rights in this country. Men benefit from reproductive justice in this country. Men benefit from birth control. there's a man.
I can speak to that.
Yes. So I think that we help men by bringing them into a movement and not saying show up and shut up, which I've heard feminists say, I mean, very recently, that like, how should men come into, you know, these spaces? Show up and shut up. No, I don't want men to shut up. I want men to speak up. I want them to speak to other men. I want them to bring other men into this conversation. We need conversations with all genders in the room.
I'm with you. I think there's a question of discernment on when men are supposed to speak up versus shut up.
Sure.
Do you know what I mean?
Like, sure.
I think that, and this goes to my whole argument against the quote unquote male feminist.
Yeah.
Which is like, that is not a time to speak up. Calling myself a feminist is when I should shut up. Because
right.
What I'm doing is I'm actually co-opting a movement and putting myself as a man at the front of it because I cannot not be a part of something.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I can't just let this thing happen without me being like, me too, guys. Hey, whoa. Did you guys see Dan over here? I'm also a feminist. Thank you. And what that ends up doing is that's me speaking over women, which is the fucking problem.
Right.
Right. And so there's the spaces, like you said, speaking to other men. And I try to not assume anyone wants me to talk. Do you know what I mean? When I'm in certain spaces, like if there's a lot of women having a conversation about something, I try not to assume that my opinion is required in that, you know, and I wait until somebody either asks me or I think I have something to present and then I ask if I can present it.
Yeah.
It's that whole, and it's like, it's okay. So I know in your book, you asked a lot of dudes the hardest thing about being a man. And for me, I think it's knowing when I should act like a man. Do you know what I mean?
Tell me more.
Like opening doors.
Yeah.
Or like paying for things.
Yeah.
Or like, you know, like being the assertive male. Yeah. I don't know when I'm supposed to do that anymore. It's a very hard thing, right?
I know. And I have empathy for that because the world has changed a lot. I want us to stop individualizing all of the pain and harm in society onto people and look at the collective.
You have no idea how many times we've said exactly those words on this show in the past like 2 weeks.
Yes. Again, you were born into a system that will make you do bad things. And you're born into a system that has all kinds of power structures that are not good for you and not good for other people. It kind of takes pressure off to acknowledge that you have done bad things and that to forgive yourself. And when we create a culture where no forgiveness is possible and you get like exiled to another fucking planet
or if you do fucking basement behind three steel plates.
Exactly. Then you're not going to acknowledge your mistakes, right? You're not going to be interested in examining your own behaviors and attitudes and be interested in change.
So that was Dan chatting to Liz Plank. I have many thoughts.
Author of the book For the Love of Men, A New Vision for Mindful Masculinity. Naz, have thoughts.
I have many thoughts. I have many thoughts, but the first one, right at the start where you were talking about like dads asking practical questions, I actually think it's really nice when dads do that. And I used to have this too, where it only dawned on me a few years ago, because my dad always asks me loads of practical questions and it used to really annoy me. And then my mother was like, you know, that's how he shows you he loves you. And I've learned to utilize this. Now I'm just like, anything to do with my taxes or I need to speak to a solicitor or anything, it's like straight on the phone with my dad. And I'm like, if that's how he shows love, dude, man, I can massively benefit from that.
We could all use a little love every now and then. Yeah, my dad will be like, you know, if the paint on your car is starting to, you might want to make sure you get some wax on that. You know what I mean? And I'm like, okay, cool.
It's
going to up the resale value of my car. Thanks, Dad.
I've come to realize this is great, though, because I think like dads get so slagged off for like not being emotionally aware. But like ever since my mom made that clear to me, I'm like, this is great. I can ask my dad for all this advice.
Does this sound healthy, what you're describing? I mean, it sounds like you're taking advantage of your father's lack of emotional vocabulary.
No, he's gotten a lot better at that stuff. But sometimes I think we really slag off like things men do that are not necessarily that bad and actually quite helpful.
I think
so. It did make me laugh because I was just
I think I'm siding with Liz on this one. I think that
you can do both. You can be emotion. You can talk about emotions and also about the paint on your car and whether you filed your taxes.
According to Doreen, when I say you can do both, I'm taking the easy way out of an argument.
Your fences.
Yeah. So, I think as great as it is, and as practical as a lot of the stuff my father checks in on, you know. And yeah, obviously you could do both, but to do one in absence of the other, I'd rather have, you know, heavy conversations with the old man.
Okay, so this is really weird because you had the conversation with Liz, so I'm kind of responding to things Liz said, which is a bit of a weird way to do things. But I felt quite weird and confused at the end of this because Liz talked a lot about men being told that they are bad rather than what they're doing is bad. And I kind of have some issue with this sort of line of thinking because basically feminists are the ones who have started the conversation about how patriarchy affects men. And feminist mothers are the ones that I know many of who are very much trying to raise their boys to be able to express themselves and to be three-dimensional and to not have to do with like all the bullshit scriptures that society gives them. Women, any woman who has been in an abusive relationship will tell you that she has tried to be compassionate towards the guy who was being abusive, that, oh, I understand, you're hurt, I understand, you're upset, what can I do to help, blah, blah, blah. I think women are constantly showing compassion to men and having that thrown in their faces, or having men not do anything. And I think if now we're in a situation where guys have no option but to have to step up, then that's a great thing. And that is a result of women laying boundaries and saying that I'm not just going to like make excuses for you behaving badly because you're hurt, or because society doesn't let you express yourself, or because you have some childhood trauma. I just really think this kind of I don't think guys are being told they're bad at all. I think people are just laying boundaries that stop breaking shit, which is something you've said before.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I just feel like women do so much showing compassion to the men in their lives. And now we're at a stage where women are laying boundaries. And that is how change happens, by putting your foot down, by not taking shit, you know? I just really don't think it's a case of like men being told they're bad, but men being told, okay, you guys need to start making some changes.
Yeah, you got to start pumping your own gas, Iwona. It's tough. It's really tough because I don't know that I've ever felt like anyone has told me I'm bad, but I can definitely see situations where that's what's going on. I'm also just universally likable, so even when I do bad things, people are usually pretty nice to me about it.
Yeah, yeah.
Listen, I don't know what to tell you. It's just who I am. But at the same time, I definitely agree with you. And I think honestly, and I didn't think it at the time, because Liz and I had a great conversation, and I just was very active and whatever, but listening back to it, it feels almost condescending to say, because like part of what she talked about was like, you know, it's condescending to men to just like say like, oh, we're idiots, and like, let's not fucking try to pretend we're smarter than we are, you know, which I agree with. But then to also go like, it's, you know, men can't handle it if you tell them that they're bad. It's like, well, wait, which is it? Am I capable of, you know, like having fully formed thoughts or not? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. And also, actually, right on my desk, I have this book, which is The Will to Change: Men, Masculinity, and Love by bell hooks, which I haven't read yet, but it's on my reading list. But I feel like this book was written like, what, 20 years ago or something. And in it, bell hooks was talking about men not being allowed to be full humans and the effect it has on them. And my point being that like women have started these conversations, and I think nothing really changes until you lay boundaries. I think now the situation we're in, where women are super pissed and men are like feeling like, what the hell do I do? And they're having to look at their end of the equation. I think that's a great place to be. The best thing I've learned from the men in my life is to not feel overly sorry for guys. Mm. I've had this happen in so many situations, and Dan, you've done it too, where some guy has acted badly and the response from a lot of the guys will be like, that really sucks. Person X must really not be in a good place, but that is not your problem. And that is not for you to sit there and fix. And I think it's interesting when I hear guys say that, and I don't know if that's because as guys, maybe they're like, this is how I would best respond if I was the guy in this situation. I don't know if that's why men are saying that, but that is something I universally hear from most of the men in my life, to not feel overly sorry and overly compassionate in the face of behavior that isn't right.
Yeah, see, this is just one example of why men are better than women. Just one of many. All right, we'll see you next time. What if I ended the season on that? What if the season ended with just like out of left field misogyny?
And then the other thought I had, I'm just throwing a lot of thoughts at you. The other thought I had was that, because, you know, she was saying about like, if we shame men, then they'll go into the arms of Jordan Peterson and Joe Rogan and whoever. I actually really like Joe Rogan's show. But anyway, she was saying that.
Of course you do.
I think, why did you say that?
I don't
know.
I don't listen to Joe Rogan, but I feel like I hate him. Anyway.
I really like
his
show.
He's one of these
show,
guys
though,
where I'm like, I don't need to know what you think.
No, but there's something quite sweet about him. Anyway, let's...
I don't give a fuck about sick gains, you know what I mean?
Okay, but anyway, what she was saying there, I don't know, this is hard because it's like, I feel like that's always what an abusive person will say, right? They'll be like, oh, you know, you pushed me to being mean, you know? And again, going back to the scenario I was talking about, any woman in an abusive situation will be like, I was honest about my needs, or I tried to be assertive and I was told that that's what made him flip, that's what made him switch or whatever, you know? But the thing is, I think what I'm trying to get at is that if someone has shame issues, speaking as someone who had shame issues, there's really not a lot you can do to make them not feel ashamed, you know? Like, I feel like when I had serious shame issues, like, any sort of criticism would have felt like a personal attack on me. Like, it really didn't matter how you did that criticism. Mm. And the only way to make things change was for that person to have to lose everything or to be in a situation where there is no option but to have to look at the problem. So I just think shifting that onus, like, if someone has shame issues, there's really not a lot you can do to, like, you know, have a reasonable conversation with them. I don't know.
Yeah. But I agree. For me, the same thing had to happen. I had to get to a really hard place in life where I had to make a decision. Like, is the way I'm living, like, worth it? Do you know what I mean? Like, is.
But your one's pretty compelling, though.
Sure. For me, it took sitting on a bench in Central Park, drunk at, yeah, I don't know, like 10 a.m. on a Thursday. Just with my face just, like, beet red, just like a bloated, sweaty tomato on my head, or on my neck. And it took this homeless woman coming out of nowhere and telling me to use sunscreen.
Oh,
even
wow.
even though I wasn't sunburnt, I was just an alcoholic. I, like, was so drunk I couldn't even articulate that I hadn't been in the sun. And she was...
And that was like a yeah. wake-up. That's cool that an old woman
yeah,
gave you your wake-up
call.
Just
like an old pigeon lady in Central Park was like, hey, take better care of yourself, you know?
And you're
and
like,
I was
shit,
like,
things
oh,
are
son of a bitch. I'm too pretty, you know? I can't be having unsolicited advice on my outward appearance from a visibly homeless person. At that point, it's like everything's gone and I need to make a decision. It, like, is the way that I have decided I'm going to live working out, or do I need to suck it up and listen to somebody else? And I chose option two, but option one is very attractive. Option one of, like, digging deeper into my own hole of misery is, like, real sexy. Do you know what I mean? And so I get it. I get why when somebody says something and I feel shame around it, the more attractive thing is to dig deeper into the shame spiral. I get it. I agree with you that the only way to get to an end is to get to the end.
I don't know. I just feel maybe my takeaway for this season is that, and this has come up in some of our previous episodes, but I don't think anyone is inherently good or bad. Mm. We are capable of many things. Men, women, and people in between or whatever. We are all capable of a huge range of behaviors. And the focus should be to look at how we've behaved. And also, our responsibility is to call out other people when they behave badly and to lay boundaries and to let those people break if necessary. Because that's the only way things get better. Like, look at any sort of social or political change that's taken place throughout history. It was due to someone getting up and making a scene and being like, this is not acceptable. Do you know what I mean? So I think the period we're in right now, even though I've been complaining about the elections here in the UK and a bunch of other stuff, I think long run, if, you know, people are laying boundaries, women are laying boundaries and guys are having to deal with it, that's long run a really good thing. Yeah, I don't think most feminists are saying men are bad. They're just like, this is damaging and needs to stop.
Yeah, I think, you know, now that I'm, like, hearing it again, I think a lot of people are saying you are bad. And I don't know that it's feminists, but it is, like, this big, it's the whole internet thing, you know, where, like, all these comment threads and the fucking tweets and the whatever, it's just everybody assaulting each other. And they're not saying what you said is wrong. They're going, you're a piece of shit.
Yeah, but our conversation is about men.
No. I know. But a lot of that is going toward men. I'm just saying that I'm just trying to see one way of interpreting this. All right. I like to.
You're sitting on
I'm
the
just
fence.
Trying to. I'm just trying not to railroad our guest. We'll see you next season, everybody.
We are back in. Dude, it's not railroading a guest. I'm a journalist. I'm up for people, like, you know, arguing with what
no,
I say.
No, I'm sure she
I'm
is
sure
as
Liz
well.
Is cool
yeah.
With that
no,
too.
I just thought it'd be a really.
So don't be
I just thought it was a really
like-
funny way to end.
That was The Gender Knot. We spoke to Liz Plank, who said a lot of great stuff, and her book is really cool. Do check it out. And it's okay. It's okay to like some of what someone says and also disagree with some other of what people say.
Interesting. That sounds a lot like sitting on a fence.
We're back Doreen. In March. Everyone, go see Frozen 2 because I'm going to start doing spoilers.
Ooh. It's coming in March,
spoilers.
Frozen 2 spoilers.
I actually really want to say what it's about. Okay, spoiler. It's about post-colonialism. Everyone go see it.
Whoa.
Yeah. We're going to be back with a bonus episode in January. Have a good new year.
Bye.